This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. The most memorable interviews and listener calls from the week that was on Fight Back with Libby Znaimer. Welcome to the best of Fight Back with Jane Brown.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Sunday edition of the Best of Fight Back. More of what you want to hear from the week that was. As a woman, do you have a gender preference as to whether your doctor is male or female? And what about you guys? Does it matter to you whether you are treated by a woman or male physician? I asked the question while filling in for Libby on Wednesday because of a new U.S. study published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, which concludes hospitalized women are less likely to die or be readmitted to hospital if they are treated by women doctors. Now, the difference is minimal. In the study of people 65 and older, 8.15% of women treated by female physicians died within 30 days, compared with 8.38% of women treated by male physicians. But researchers say erasing that gap could save 5,000 women's lives a year. Our medical record panelists joined me to discuss. Dr. Malcolm Moore is a medical oncologist at Princess Margaret Cancer Center. Dr. Fahad Razak is Canada Research Chair in Data-Informed Healthcare Improvement at the University of Toronto. And Dr. Nadia Alam is a family doctor and anesthetist in Georgetown, Ontario.
A lot of the women who've come to my practice, and actually some of the men who've come to my practice, come to me and say, you take my symptoms more seriously. You don't just dismiss them as anxiety or as being tired or as being a mom or as being a dad or working too much, being too stressed out. You actually take these symptoms seriously. Then I'm going to focus on perimenopause as an example. A lot of stuff gets missed leading up to that time, that final transition when your periods stop and you head into the postmenopausal stage. There are a lot of symptoms that are part and parcel of perimenopause, and there are a lot of symptoms that are not. However, they all overlap, and both sides can be treated and often aren't, because they're just dismissed as, oh, you're tired, you're a mom, you're busy taking care of your parents, you're busy working, and that's just the way it is. So I think having a female doctor actually helps women particularly be able to explain things that and be taken in a different way than perhaps when they're speaking to a male physician, right? And we know women present with illness differently than men.
Okay, let's go to our male doctors on the panel. Dr. Razak, how do you feel about this information that's come out of this U.S. study suggesting that some women are better off having a woman doctor than a male doctor?
I found this study to be really interesting, and it actually builds on extensive prior research, including research actually by our research group here in Ontario. So we did a study that was published 2 years ago where we looked at 200,000 patient encounters in hospital here in Ontario, and we showed that patients treated on average by women physicians had a 10% lower risk of dying in hospital than patients treated by their male colleagues. And we explored further why that occurred. And we found that, for example, female physicians were more likely to order tests on their patients, and they kept their patients longer in hospital. And this built on extensive prior research that had shown that female physicians on average were found to be much more patient-centered in their clinical encounters, that they spent a longer period of time communicating on average with their patients. They showed more empathy and concern for their patients' health issues. And they were more likely to, for example, keep up to date with research literature, consult informally with their specialist colleagues, or spend more time reading the patient chart. And so we saw this effect layer on to a broader behavioral series of studies that show that female physicians really do approach these medical encounters with their patients with some important systematic differences. And I would say this as a male colleague, things that we can learn and model.
Well, let's go over to Dr. Malcolm Moore. When you hear this study, when you read about other similar studies, Are you able to learn as a man what your female colleagues are doing that maybe you're not doing, or is that too much of a broad stroke?
I think this study doesn't show us anything. This is not a good study. I looked at it in preparation for this. It's a very small difference. And this study was, it's described as a sprawling study, which is not normally a scientific study, but it looked at a subset of patients. And I don't know, it, for any of our listeners who've been in the hospital, when you're in the hospital, you're not looked after by one doctor. You're looked after by, you see many different doctors. And so if you talk to someone who's been in the hospital and you ask them, who was your doctor? They will see different people on the weekend. They'll see different people who are in the wards. They'll see different specialists. So to say that someone who is in the hospital is cared for by one physician, I think is overly simplistic. So I don't think it's a particularly good study. I think it kind of catches your attention because it shows this difference in favor of female physicians over male physicians. But it's a very small difference. But I think what we do need to do is celebrate the fact that we have many more women physicians graduating now than we used to.
Dr. Malcolm Moore, medical oncologist at Princess Margaret Cancer Center. Dr. Fahad Razak, Canada Research Chair in Data-Informed Healthcare Improvement at the University of Toronto. And Dr. Nadia Alam, family doctor and anesthetist in Georgetown, Ontario. This is Zoomer Radio's Best of Fight Back. I'm Jane Brown. This article on Zoomer Media property Daily Hive got our attention, showing a poster outside a Loblaws store with the line, "The first annual steal from Loblaws Day, May 12, 2024. At the same time, there is a planned boycott of Loblaws that is expected to start on May 1st. And which emerged out of an online community called Loblaws is Out of Control. Sylvain Charlebois is the senior director of the Agri-Food Analytics Lab at Dalhousie University and joined me to talk about these campaigns. I asked Sylvain if this National Day of Theft is a real thing.
I think what's happening is that some groups are getting organized to boycott certain grocers like Loblaws, but sometimes some of these movements, and frankly, people have every right to boycott a company if they want to, but sometimes these movements actually will attract, well, thugs and anarchists and people who basically just want to break the law. And that's kind of what's going on right now, because if you actually go on that Reddit page, I think they've erased most of it now, but some of the comments are absolutely unbelievable. It's all about anger and violence, and you just don't want that. So I'm not surprised to see some of these posters, and I'm just hoping that that it will stop, because it doesn't accomplish anything.
So the Loblaws is Out of Control boycott of Loblaws starting on May 1st. This National Day of Theft, from what you can tell, is an offshoot of that. Is that what's happened?
That is my belief, because I've actually been watching that group since November when it was created, and for a while you did see posts that would encourage people to steal and do all sorts of mischiefs, and I just didn't believe what I was reading, and they're very vile in terms of the language they use against people, including myself, by the way.
Tell us, how prevalent is greedflation now that inflation has come down to an almost reasonable level? And arguably, we've also seen the grocery giants respond to our concerns about high prices and greedflation. And I personally am actually noticing a difference in seeing prices come down, or at least there are more sale prices more often.
Oh, absolutely. So even Statistics Canada would agree with you. The food inflation rate is down to 1.9%, still one of the lowest in the world. When you look at the greenflation argument, you have to look at gross margins, not profits. Companies should set record profits every year. That's how inflation works. So this argument about record profits is a false narrative. You have to look at gross margins, revenues minus the cost of goods. And when you look at Metro, Empire Sobeys and Loblaws, all three of them, gross margins have actually remained basically the same the last 5 years. And these margins come from verified, audited financial reports. Again, Metro was reporting this morning, and the gross margin that came out of those documents are the same. The other thing that people need to know is food inflation and food sales. Food sales growth have actually remained underwater compared to food inflation. In other words, all of these grocers are actually making money selling other things than food. Mm. So in Loblaws' case, Shoppers Drug Mart is their bank. They actually make a lot of money with prescription drugs, cosmetics, perfumes, and things like that. So if you want to accuse Loblaws of gouging consumers selling Chanel No. 5, you may have a case, but not with sandwiches and flour.
So what is the best way to fight back if you've been upset about pricing at your grocery store? How do you change as a consumer so that you're winning?
Avoid big box stores. So first of all, if you are angry with Loblaws about higher food prices, you should be logically, you should be angry at all grocers, including Empire and Metro, because all of them we've seen higher food prices. So if you're angry about food prices, go to independent grocers. There's tons of them in Toronto, tons, and they offer good deals. Avoid big box stores, go to the small shops. Small doesn't necessarily mean more expensive. That's what I would do.
Sylvain Charlebois, Senior Director of the Agri-Food Analytics Lab at Dalhousie University. This is Zoomer Radio's Best of Fight Back. I'm Jane Brown. Coming up after the break, Mayor Chow visits the Zoomerplex as her approval rate holds steady. We discuss next.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Good isn't good enough. Make way for the best of Fight Back with Jane Brown on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Olivia Chow does not very often visit individual radio or television stations. It just hasn't been her thing since she's become Toronto's mayor. But she made an exception for us Wednesday on the morning Zoom with Sam and Jane here on Zoomer Radio. We talked about her plans for the city, including that day's announcement of 1,000 new and improved sidewalk litter bins, how she wants to implement more provisions around aging at home, and how she plans to tackle the never-ending construction in Toronto. In fact, she offered us a tease of a coming announcement around closing down roads by private developers.
If you want to close the road, if it's a private contractor, good. But if you do it faster, we'll charge you less. If you do it slower, we'll charge you more because you're closing the street. So that kind of congestion pricing, we've never used it before. I'm asking them to plan for it. That isn't out there yet, but that will come.
Mayor Chow also reiterated what she said last week about moving toward 24/7 construction on the Gardiner between Dufferin and Strawn so the rehabilitation can be completed before the current 3-year time frame. Is Mayor Chow doing a good job? 52% of respondents to a recent survey say yes. I asked that question of our Tune Into the Town Municipal panel. Alex Blumenstein is co-founder of The Peak. David Crombie, former mayor of Toronto, among many other accomplishments. And Karen Stintz, CEO of Variety Village.
Mayors typically have an above 50% approval rating because generally speaking, they're cheerleaders for the city and people want that. And I think she's done some things that people didn't expect, like, you know, being able to get money from the government, being able to work with Doug Ford and uploading the highways and for some small concessions. And, you know, she did implement a tax hike that, you know, certainly Torontonians are not used to seeing. And, you know, the bills haven't been sent out yet for the second half of the tax season. So
right.
There's going to be a bit of sticker shock, I think, for a lot of people when they get that bill, because
yep.
It'll be double-ended. She admittedly inherited a bit of a mess, and it doesn't get fixed overnight, and it looks like she's taking the steps that she needs to get the city back on track.
Negotiations so far with Doug Ford, with members of Trudeau's cabinet, with Trudeau himself, they've gone very well. Somehow she's found a way to connect with these politicians on a different level.
I think what she's done, it's become less ideological. I'll take her word for it. I think that's probably right. I think what also counts for it is she is different from a lot of politics today, which people think blaming the other guy is somehow the right thing to do. You don't hear her blaming other people. And that's it almost stands alone because our politics has become so sharp-edged. So I think it's her style and her... and perhaps a lack of ideology now. She's very pragmatic about it, and her style is even Stephen, and people respect that.
Right. Alex, you win more friends or you attract more bees with honey, right?
Yeah, I mean, she seems to be quite pragmatic in her approach. She's getting things done. I think her experience at multiple levels of government is coming through and showing. And I think, you know, to maintain a good approval rating as a mayor, I think really comes down to, you know, no major scandals, right? She's not getting into any trouble. So people aren't noticing and people aren't paying attention. You know, we've had a long time of scandals in our past mayor. So I think just not being embarrassed is a pretty good place to be. And that allows her to, you know, have the support of half the city, which is not bad.
How long is that window, Karen, in your experience, in terms of making sure that Toronto property owners, you, me, that we feel like we're getting value for the extra 9.5% increase?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the real challenge moving ahead, is that people need to start seeing cleaner streets, cleaner parks, and also that they need to have a better sense of safety and security. I mean, the cars are being stolen. Now it's moved to carjacking. People don't really feel safe in their neighborhoods. And that's real. And, you know, the risk to that is that communities begin to become more insular and less generous. And that is a really serious issue for our city. And so she's got to pay attention to those kinds of things, I think, and be able to deliver some real quality improvements for how people experience the city.
And David, you know, on the same theme, Mayor Chow has said repeatedly at various announcements and even here at the Zoomerplex today that she inherited a mess. But at what point does that mess become her mess?
People have short memories for good reason, and that is life changes. All people go through their life cycles and so on. So people actually don't pay attention on a regular basis about how things have gone on. They're actually more interested in seeing basically how you're going to face the problem you've got today and tomorrow, and not necessarily how well you did with some of those problems in the past. And I think she's probably alive to that. But it is certainly true that people are looking for what you're going to do, not necessarily giving you a hell of a lot of credit for what you've done.
David Crombie, former mayor of Toronto, Karen Stintz, CEO of Variety Village, and Alex Blumenstein, co-founder of The Peak. This is Zoomer Radio's Best of Fight Back. I'm Jane Brown. We're coming to the end of National Immunization Awareness Week, with a focus on the importance of keeping up with our vaccinations. More than 200 whole health pharmacies are taking part in a campaign called Dose for Dose, where they are donating up to 30,000 childhood vaccines for measles, polio, and tetanus to UNICEF Canada. And as part of the campaign, they're encouraging Canadians, including older adults, to get their own vaccinations, whether it's for meningitis B, HPV, pneumonia, RSV, and shingles. Joining me on Thursday, Dr. Molly Yang, Director of Pharmacy Innovation and Professional Affairs at Whole Health Pharmacy Partners, a national group with over 200 pharmacies across Canada.
We've pledged to donate up to 30,000 vaccines until March 2025, and we will be taking stock of the amount of vaccines that are given in our pharmacies. And to do that, we're hoping to encourage Canadians locally in our communities to talk to their pharmacists and to healthcare providers about their vaccine, to get those recommended vaccines and protecting themselves, their loved ones, and their families, all while giving back to the global community.
Right. So just by going and getting one of the vaccines, meningitis B, HPV, pneumonia, RSV, shingles, you could be vaccinating a child in a third world nation.
Yes, exactly. For Canadians that perhaps are not yet eligible for any of those vaccines, or if they don't wish to get a vaccine at this time, they can also participate in our Dose for Dose campaign by completing an online educational quiz. And our quizzes, they're administered by our nonprofit partner, iBoost Immunity, and they are linked on our campaign website.
There are big vaccination gaps in our population. At least one in four Canadian adults are missing or unsure if they're missing a routine vaccine, and that's sort of what Jim was indicating there as well.
Yeah, lots of, I think lack of awareness is probably the biggest issue that we deal with, right? In that people aren't aware that if there are vaccines that are not provincially funded, right, that they're still beneficial for you. So asking your healthcare providers about those, even if they're not covered.
Do we have an idea when we look globally at how many children or what percentage of children are unvaccinated in developing nations and third world countries?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, Jane. And we see even locally within Canada, there are huge vaccination gaps for adults and children. But when we're looking at a global scale, at least one in five children does not have access to these essential life-saving vaccines, right? These are measles, polio, tetanus vaccines, which are really important. So we're hoping that with this campaign to be able to contribute to that.
And so as part of it, the 30,000 vaccinations for children around the world, you are giving these vaccines to UNICEF and then they are administering them. Is that how it works?
Yes, correct. So we provide a financial donation, and UNICEF Canada and UNICEF, which they operate in over 100 countries worldwide, will be giving the vaccines to the most vulnerable populations.
Recap for us what it's all about, Dr. Yang.
For Dose, we are excited to launch this campaign across our 220-plus pharmacies across Canada, in which each dose of an eligible vaccine, including HPV, meningitis, shingles, RSV, and pneumonia vaccines, will result in a dose of measles, polio, or tetanus vaccine donated to children worldwide. And through this campaign, we're hoping to educate and address vaccination gaps locally across Canada, while also giving back and fostering global health.
Dr. Molly Yang, Director of Pharmacy Innovation and Professional Affairs at Whole Health Pharmacy Partners, a national group with over 200 pharmacies across Canada. You're listening to The Best of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. I'm Jane Brown. Coming up, what you had to say about the week that was and the Fight Back Knockout Call of the Week.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Zoomer Radio, pulling no punches with the best of Fight Back with Jane Brown.
Fight Back with Libby Znaimer has the most informed guests on the week's hot topics, and we also rely on you for your valued opinions. Here are some of this week's best calls. Dennis in Toronto called about greedflation at the grocery stores.
For 3 years, all the major grocers have had record profits with increasing food prices, blaming labor issues, transport issues, the cost of fuel. They've all been there before, not as bad as COVID, but for them to have record profits 3 years in a row.
Raymond in Etobicoke phoned about the so-called National Day of Theft at Loblaws.
I would suggest a little change to their actions. Go into their grocery store, the Loblaws, if it's your regular one, doesn't matter. Go into the Loblaws, get a shopping cart, go around, put a bunch of stuff in it, come back and avoid the cashier. leave the cart in the store, walk out with nothing stolen. Let them see a bunch of shopping carts with food in it that might have been stolen.
And now, Fight Back's Knockout Call of the Week.
There were a lot of great calls this week, but the winner of the Fight Back Knockout Call of the Week is Wendy in Guelph, who phoned about being a diehard Leafs fan.
It is hard to be a Leafs fan, but I have always been one. Born in 62, so I was three or four years old on my father's shoulders with my grandmother in downtown Toronto when they had the parade of the last time that they won. Go Leafs, go, because it's hard to be a Leaf fan, but damn it, I am.
That does it for this week's Best of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. If you'd like to qualify for the Fight Back Knockout Call of the Week, phone us noon to one weekdays. Or if you have a comment, email us at fightback@zoomer.ca. Follow us on X at @FightbackLibby and call our Fight Back voicemail anytime at 416-367-9636. I'm Jane Brown. Join me again next weekend when we'll round up the best of Fight Back.
Best of Fight Back is produced by Jane Brown, Ziv Hadi, and Dan Christakos. Technical production by Ian Robertson. Executive producer, Moses Neimer. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.